And welcome to the first edition of the 2026 year. I am not Mikey. My name is Nathan Pagliaroli, and I'm the new host for Laurier's premier sports show, Golden Bold. Today, I'm joined with two great commentators for Laurier Sports, Frankie and Owen. So, boys, you know, I don't want to get right into it, but I think we got to rip the Band-Aid right off. Laurier's coaching conundrum, a lot of changes since our last episode back in November. So, Frankie, Falds, what are we thinking about that?
Okay, well, I think that a lot of people are blowing the situation out of proportion, right? Saying, oh, how he betrayed the team and all this stuff, whatever. He was our head coach for 13 years, okay? He took this program from a very, like, mediocre state and brought it to the championship success that it has now. And I feel like making the comparison to the bad man down at LSU is a little bit harsh. Actually, I found a quote from an article I read that said the great difference is that Lane Kiffin wasn't the quarterback at LSU. Lane Kiffin's family isn't from Baton Rouge, and Lane Kiffin's wife and kids are not from Baton Rouge. So I think that connection that Falls has to the people over in London and at the Western Mustangs makes it kind of a match made in heaven. He is their all-time leading passer. Like, he's royalty over there, and he's going to get treated well. And he's a great football coach. So I think it works well for both parties, especially with our new coach, Todd Galloway. I think he's exactly the person that they should have hired and that they were going to hire from the start. I feel like a lot of football programs, even at the professional level, are doing that these days. They give their head coach the boot and then hire from within, because the system, you know, whatever, and you don't got to change much. If you bring in a completely new guy, it's everything that changes. And Laurier is a very traditional football program, running the same kind of systems that they have been for the last couple of years because it's been working. And so I feel like Todd Galloway is a great hire in this spot, and there's nothing much more to say about it.
Yeah, you could say Todd Galloway. He gave his press conference earlier today, but to speak on Falls, it's just the comparison to Lane Kiffin. I don't think it's really up to there. It's OUA Sports versus SEC. That's just totally two different worlds. He came out and said, I didn't really want a Lane Kiffin situation. And then he left over the dark of night, it felt like. It felt like almost like a Baltimore Colts situation where the whole thing is just gone. And especially after the seasons he's just had with Laurier. I don't know. I don't know how especially with a lot of people here at Laurier, they don't know how they feel about that. I first certainly was. I think both of you know my feelings towards it. It wasn't the happiest day of my life, especially as a person so enshrined in Laurier Sports and so involved with it. It just wasn't my, you know, happiest moment seeing, especially going to a team like Western, where there's no love lost between the two schools. But Owen, what do you think about the whole Falls to Galloway situation, the whole of him leaving? I want to hear your opinion on this.
Yeah, no, for sure. I was a little bit caught off guard by that too, because I know Falls had signed that extension with Laurier right a couple years ago to sign through 2030, right? And so now seeing him leave, it would definitely caught me off guard too. As you guys both alluded to, right, going to the rivals in Western, it's kind of in Laurier Western, kind of going back and forth for the past few years. And I was a bit surprised by it, but it makes sense. You know, Folds played there from 2005 to 2009. He was one of their better quarterbacks that the Western's ever produced. And he wants to go back there and give it a go. But like Frankie was saying, right, he took this program to heights that it's never seen before. And he has a great coaching staff that's underneath him with Ben Rokirky and Galloway, and hiring from within truly like helps the team. And yeah, I see Laurier program still having a great year and a great future to come. Obviously, you know, guys like El Garzma and Jordan, they're done, but their mentorship has really struck a strong spot for Laurier to, you know, have still success for many years to come.
Yeah, that's a good point. Just to talk about the future of Laurier football, where does this team go now? Like, you think Todd Galloway, but that's not the name brand that Michael Falds brought. And you got to think about recruiting. You see Laurier is still bringing some great talent. You see the recruiting post every now and then. But still, it's kind of like when James Franklin left Penn State. Their recruiting class is absolutely cooked now.
Fell off the face of the earth, and he's stealing 4 and 5 stars that are over at Virginia Tech now. So now that program's going to get all of those Penn State recruits that just completely jumped ship. And and you feel like, you look at Penn State now, their recruiting classes are lower than some FCS schools, which is just abysmal for a Big Ten program with such prestige, right?
Yeah, especially like when Western is a bigger school, we're not going to deny that. That is one of the biggest schools in Ontario and Canada, really. And they got the deep pockets. We saw allegedly Falls is getting paid. That might be, I'd say, like $250,000 a year. That's just crazy money for an OUA coach. And where does Laurier go? Like, it's a school that has prestige in football. But if you go around asking a lot of people, I'm not here to really hate on the school that we're all from, but it's not the biggest name brand school. I think we can all agree to that. So like, where do we go from here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think kind of like making a name for ourselves too. We've had the chance to make our name for ourselves as a smaller school, being that, you know, cohesive, tight knit community that we have here at Laurier. But yeah, no, I think the legacy that Foles has brought into here. Obviously, it was shocking for a lot of people. You even saw the tweet from Al Grossmill kind of saying that Western snatched up our coach too after the win there. But like I'm saying, I truly think Laurier's team cohesion is very good. And I think this program, the culture that Falls built, and being that you know, Galloway and Vera Kirky has been here for a while, you know, I think a lot of people, like you said, are kind of getting down about it. But this program's got lots of good things to offer still.
Just to jump on that point, you said Van Merkirky. I listened to his speech this morning during the press conference. He was very emotional and very excited to continue the work that Falls. So I think this program is in good hands, obviously, with Galloway and with Van Merkirky. Like, they're both going to do a fantastic job. I have some quotes from Todd Galloway during that press conference. His major like point that he wanted to drive home was to put the student athlete first. He mentioned that his offensive scheme is not his offensive scheme, it's the student's offensive scheme, and they just adapt to it and change it up as they need to. And he's just kind of more of a mentor role, which he wants to bring to both sides of the field, which I think is a very good thing, especially in collegiate football, because you have players that come from different areas, come from different play schemes, and they kind of like make a mix amalgamation of all these different plays defensively and offensively. And you got a quarterback like Cal Wither, who had a phenomenal year last year, bit of a choke job in the Yates Cup, but that's besides the point. He had a phenomenal year last year, led the country in passing yards and touchdowns. So I feel like with him at the helm and a new head coach, because he only played 1 year here with under Fultz, and he's got four more potentially with now Todd Galloway. So I feel like new coach and a new-ish quarterback, I feel like we can flip the script and make it a little and make an even greater push towards the ultimate goal of winning another Vanier.
Yeah, that's a great point. And you know, I don't really want to keep beating a dead horse in Falls. It's just the next step. Can we continue to build on what we've had? Because we've seen Laurier football, it's just continuing to build and build and build. And I think it's all comes down to mental at this point, where if you cannot let this situation kind of break you down, I don't want to keep talking about Laurier football because we have so many other great teams we need to get to. But if we continue to build on to what we have so far, as Frankie and Moen have said so far, this team could still be good. And, you know, I'm circling the calendar for when we play Western. I hope it's a home game for us because I feel like that's going to be an electric atmosphere. But to move on, Laurier Women's Hockey. Now, this is a team that, number three ranked in the U Sports. It's just a great team overall. I've had the pleasure of calling a few of these games, and it just looks like they're playing a different sport than when other teams are playing because it is just so dominant. And Owen, you're shaking your head, you're loving it. Owen, what do you have to say about this women's team?
No, they're having a really good year. I mean, it's a bit of a surprise that they're maybe like that high, but not really a big surprise. I mean, when you look at it, like, you know, they're very well coached by Kelly Patton. You know, she's been the coach there for a while. You look at their goaltending situation. They can go between Kayla Renaud and Sarah Howell. They kind of split the games fairly even this year, and Howell's stats are a little bit better. But yeah, they're getting a lot of production from Glendon and Elle Spencer. I actually haven't had the chance yet to call one of their games, so I'm just kind of going on what I've been so far. But I've been a couple of their games, and you know, they're definitely got a deep team, and they don't really have any weak spots.
Just to jump on that, Sarah Howell has an unbelievable stat line this year. She got a .976 save percentage. That is absolutely unreal. And the games that I've seen that she's played, like the one that stuck out to me was on the 29th of November, the Woodstock home away from home game. That was an amazing performance from from her, and she just commands that crease, and she's just a great player that ultimately puts the team on her back sometimes, and sometimes when the offense isn't really performing, which has happened a couple times, it's always been Howell or Renault sometimes to just get her team rolling and get a couple goals, because in that Woodstock game, we didn't see much offense until about the third period, which is a bit of a common trend. You see a little bit maybe halfway through the game, the offense just starts to pick up and catch them on the other team's weaknesses. But other than that, Laurier women's hockey has just been absolutely unreal this year, and to be third in the OUA is, honestly, I'm surprised they're not higher. Can't even lie to you.
Sure. With the women's team, Sarah Howell, like, we cannot say enough good things about her. I had a stat. I was calling a women's game. They were playing Ottawa. And one of those stats, I was searching up, doing some research before the game. At the time, she had the same amount of shutouts as she has goals allowed on the season.
Yeah, that, no, that makes sense.
That's insanity for a goalie in hockey, like, especially in U sports. This is a league that may not be as high-flying as, say, the OHL or something like that, the NHL, but they still have some elite talent like that, like Claire Chisholm's on Laurier, Al Spencer, these are some elite goal scorers, and that's around the OUA as well. And she's just been so good so often that Kayla Renault has been great, but she's just been outshined by the performances Sarah Howell's having. And just to look at the scoring and the defense, like, you can say Sarah Howell is so great, but she cannot be that great without her defense.
That's like, very true.
The system that Kelly Patton has in place, where she is just using her big defenders to push the puck to the outside. Like, you will watch a game and teams like Ottawa and Brock will have like one or two high danger chances per game, and have that sort of efficiency as a defensive unit is just impressive from all aspects of the game. The only real drawback to this team is sometimes they do get in those 1-0, 2-1 overtime dogfights, and it seems like, where did the offense go?
Right.
But I feel like that's sometimes the case when you look at the OUA, OUA women's, is sometimes the offense does go away, but a Laurier, their top six, Elle Spencer, Claire Chisholm, just littered with talent. And I feel like they have a real shot to win it all this year. I feel like there's really only two teams in their way. It's Queens and Queens. Guelph.
Definitely Queens and Guelph for the OUA. But even you look at teams in Canada West and the RESQ, you got... RESQ, not even RESQ, still OUA. You got Concordia and you got UBC, which are the two teams that are ranked above them. And I did a little bit of research into UBC, and their team is phenomenal. They are good. And the thing is with women's hockey, right, because you don't have a league, you don't have that major junior league like the OJHL or the OHL, you don't have that in women's hockey. So all of the top talent coming out of under 16 or under 18 AAA, it's going right to U Sports. So that's what fuels the hockey and the... And these young women that are playing in the OUA and the U Sports and even the NCAA have aspirations to go to the PWHL, and that's where you're getting most of your talent from. So I feel like the men's game is a little bit more diluted in the sense that you have the major junior leagues and whatever, and that's poaching most of the talent. But the women's game, there isn't that major junior league. So you're getting the best of the best hockey when you get for U Sports. So for me, if I'm giving one advice to a fan of women's hockey, it's go to a U Sports game because it's good hockey. It's not the most expensive thing in the world either. I'm just going to say that. But it's great hockey, and it's great hockey, especially from the Laurier Golden Hawks, because they're just a phenomenal team. And you mentioned that defense with girls like Carradine Hode and Mara Klassen and Gabby LeHoux, who are just phenomenal. I watched in that Woodstock game again, I watched Carradine Hode take the puck from her own blue line and part the Red Sea like Moses, swash, walk straight through the defense, shoot the puck off the goalie's blocker, and pick up her own rebound and score. I was dumbfounded. It was phenomenal hockey playing.
Yeah, that's just a lot what we've been seeing from that Laurier team. And they've just been like simply just outworking teams. And it just feels like when you watch, especially against teams that I'm not going to say they're, you know, of a lower competition, but they're not the best of teams, especially lower. I feel like U Sports especially, it's very top heavy. It's a very top heavy league. You're going to get some teams that are world beaters, and then you're going to get some teams like the Algoma basketball, men's basketball team, which
I feel sorry for those guys.
I think they've won a game over the weekend, which is good for them.
Shout out Algoma basketball.
It's great for them, but it's just like you can see the top heaviness, and especially when I call games, especially against teams like Brock, which no disrespect to the Brock team, but Laurier just looked like a team out of their league. And it's just, they can do that. And we have a team that can do that. There's not many teams that can do that. You're in for a special treat. Now, to kind of like pivot towards the men's team, it's a team that it confuses me, really. It starts 6-0, it gets cold. And then I watched the Lakehead game, which was just on a weekend of heartbreaker for Laurier Sports. That was one of the more painful games to watch, because they were dominating them, physicality. They're faster, they're stronger. But it seems like they're just, as a team, it feels like they're all over the place. And I don't understand why, because it's a team that started out so well, 6-0, and now they're hovering around 500, just over 500. They're still in the top part of the OUA West. But I kind of want to see more out of them. But Owen, what do you really think about this men's team?
It's really interesting, right? Because, you know, looking back to last year, you know, Laurier, they had equaled their win total within the first five games of the year, right? They went 6-0, and Laurier, correct me if I'm wrong, but they only won four games last year, right? Three or four games, I think, last year.
I think it was like five.
Yeah, right? So pretty,
and four of them were in overtime.
There you go, right? So it could have been either way there. But yeah, no, bringing in like a few new players they have this year, you know, they kind of kept that same core with Chard and Leonard and Marc-Antoine Melançon. But it's been interesting. You know, you lose a guy like Kilborn, one of your steady defenders back there. And it's hard to say it too, but I get the sense that the women's team, kind of going back to that briefly, they have that stronger sense of team cohesion together, right? You look at they're always having a fun time out there, whether it's in the warm-up and in the game. And you can see the results when, you know, the closeness and the team just bonding together.
Yeah, you mentioned the core of Lucas Chard and Marc-Antoine Melançon. Lucas Chard is a phenomenal hockey player, and I've been saying this, and I'll keep saying it, and I'll beat that horse as many times as I can. Lucas Chard is a phenomenal hockey player. You look at the seasons back, he had back with the London Nationals and the Leamington Flyers, where he was just absolutely unreal. 70 points in 40 games a couple years ago with the London Nationals. That's just, again, unreal. I have no words. And the guy has been on an absolute tear this year. Top five in the OUA in points. And you got guys like Marc-Antoine Melançon, Bryce Sutherland, who had great starts to the year and are still picking up some goals here and there. But you mentioned the losing of Bryce Kilborn, which is a huge thing for this team. And I feel like that was like the lowest of the low for this season, because they started really hot, they were going up, and then they started to lose some games. You're like, okay, it's not too bad to go 6-2. And then Bryce Kilborn leaves, and you lose a cornerstone defender for your team. That's like if the New Jersey Devils just like lost Dougie Hamilton for the year, or the Golden Knights just lost Petrangelo for the year, right? It's like a huge loss for your team. But I feel like the guys that have been asked to replace them, like Ryan Mulholland and Anthony Francella, have just been great in their little supporting roles as guys like Kai Stothers really try to fill in the shoes of Bryce Kilborn. And another thing is the goaltending. It's been phenomenal. Newcomer Andrew Ness, OUA rookie, .933 save percentage, top in U Sports. Like, what more can you ask for? Laurier is leading in save percentage in both categories, men's and women's. So our goalies have been playing phenomenal. I believe it's a bit of a down year for Tristan Malbeuf, but again, he's the veteran goaltender, and he's just in there for a mentor role, in my opinion. So I feel like the men's team can definitely do more than what they're showing us. There's definitely some untapped potential somewhere. We're looking for a big game here on Saturday against Western. Shameless plug, I know. I'm going to be on color. Listen for that. But I feel like this men's team can do a lot more, and I feel like once we get over the hump of a little bit of the chemistry issues that I've been seeing watching those games, I feel like this team can do great things.
Yeah, 100%. This team can do great things. You can watch them. They can outpace a team. They can outplay a team. But systematically, sometimes it feels like you watch a game, they get outshot like 52-30, 55-25. I'm like, it doesn't feel like that, but like I feel like they try to be too clean, too fancy. And to speak on another player, you said Lucas Chard is phenomenal. He is. And it's surprising. Like, he's one of those new wave hockey players that's 5'8", 154, I think he's listed at, or some crazy number. And that's what he can do. He just plays with so much heart, so much passion. You see this guy in the puck battles in the corners. He just wins them. And that's something you have to bring up every time when you watch him, because it's so apparent. But another player I think you might have touched on there, Frankie, but Kai Stothers, he is a great player. I think he should be the captain of this Laurier team. He puts his body on the line. He seems to be a commanding force. He seems to be like a leader on that team. And just to speak to him and to his behalf, and he's just a guy you want out there on that, especially in clutch time, because he's going to throw his body out there and he's just going to do the right things at the right time. And that's what this team needs. It needs more consistency. And to speak on consistency, that was one of the key points I brought up when calling a men's basketball game, because the men's basketball team has been the anti-consistency team at Laurier right now for the sports. They're 6-8 right now. They came off a brutal loss to Western, double overtime. I called that one. That was a heart gut wrencher. That was a 20-point blown lead, come back, losing in overtime, and they losing in the Western. They're 6-8 on the season. So what are we thinking about that?
Yeah, nah, it's a definitely a tough blown loss there when you have that. And you know, in those games when you're up by 20, you really look to your veteran players to help you close out those type of games. And so, you know, losing one of those games, it's really tough, especially for the guys that don't have as much experience in OUA. Trying to bounce back from a heartbreaking loss like that is a very tough thing to do, right? So I think that's another conversation that, you know, the Golden Hawks basketball team want to have there. And you really do want to rely more on your veteran players. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, some of the veteran players would hopefully step up and, you know, maybe call a players only meeting to, you know, address that.
Now, something I noticed, I watched a couple of the men's basketball games on TV, is that Laurier's got a problem with offensive rebounds. They cannot seem to take him down. The game I watched was against TMU a couple weeks ago, but they had a strong three game, strong mid-range game. They were in it until about the midway through the third quarter. Then it started to pull away from them. But I think the main problem is their rebounding. It's been iffy, to say the least. Defensively, they're great. Defensively, they got guys in the paint, whatever, and they're eliminating their offensive rebounds for the other team. But on the other side of the ball, it feels like they're just not trying to go for those offensive rebounds. They're leaving guys open in the paint, and they're not just trying to capitalize on those putbacks and those second chance points, which are crucial in closer games, right? You mentioned that double overtime game. I feel like if they had a couple offensive second chance balls, then they could definitely have closed that one out.
Yeah, that's true. But I also think it's like a lot of, they don't make these halftime adjustments as necessary, especially in that Western game. They were doing really well, but Western adjusted when they figured out that Laurier's only game plan is to shoot threes. They lead the league in three-point attempts, 3 points made, 3-point shots made. And that's what they do best, because they're not the biggest team. I think they're the tallest players on 6'5", 6'6". That's not very tall, speaking basketball terms, really. And to have, like, you don't have that much size, you don't have that much capability, like, especially in the paint, especially offensively, that, like, teams are going to really clamp down. That's what Western really did. Their bread and butter play, swing it through into the paint and let one of your big mans put it up. And they were just, that's why they came back, kept chipping back, because Laurier, it felt like they're playing like the 2016 Warriors. Just chuck up threes from like hero ball. Like Vorpool, he came back from the Golden Hawks. That's a Golden Hawks Rookie of the Year, I believe, 2 years ago. He came back. He was on fire for some point. And then you get to the late stages of the game and he's playing like prime Curry, just chucking up shots, but they're not going in. And It's just like, you see the guys open in the corner, like, hit that instead of trying to play hero ball. But I believe Coach Cavell, I love his intensity. I love his passion. Just both sides of basketball right now, they need to – it's not the same story we're seeing as in hockey. And we really hope for, you know, maybe a better future. These are both young teams, and, you know, they can be better. But to speak to Owen and me have been going back and forth all week about MLB free agency. Oh, and I just got some news, actually, about some MLB free agency. Just showed up. Mackenzie Gore, Washington Nationals pitcher, just got traded.
Oh, no.
To the Texas Rangers, which they've been needing some pitching.
That's
for.
Very true.
Third baseman Gavin Fien, former 12th overall pick. Devin Fitzgerald. Mm-hmm. Alejandro Rosario.
Okay.
And I believe Yemini Cabrera. So it's a big-time trade to get one of the Nationals' big-time pitchers. When we thought the Nationals maybe be building up towards something, Owen. Like, I thought that team was going to be decent last year. They were garbage. And to trade away Mackenzie Gore, but for some good futures right there. So what do you think that move is for Washington and Texas?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of, you know, makes you think, like, you know, now what is the future of the Nationals, right? We saw last year, you know, a lot of young players they have, you know, with the power of James Wood and CJ Abrams. Speaking of CJ Abrams, you know, fortunately he needs to really improve his defense, because it was one of the worst in the league last year. It kind of makes you a little bit surprised because, you know, the Nationals were trending upwards. And Mackenzie Gore, you know, a pitcher who I believe they got from the Padres for us in the Soto trade a few years ago, if I'm not mistaken. And now you just trade him away. So right now that's, you know, that was kind of their ace. And so now the Nationals really need to figure out who is our go-to guy in that rotation.
Yeah, and I feel like with teams like the Nationals, it's just that you have a couple bad years. You feel like, and you think they're building towards something, they make a move like that, you just know that, okay, they're still tanking a little bit. Because I feel like with all the futures that you're getting, you can definitely find that diamond in the rough that you need to, like, jump up to that next level and start developing a really good core. And I feel like that could be James Wood for them, because that guy was phenomenal last year. CJ Abrams was good on the offensive side of the ball, too. Not so much on the defensive side. Shout out Bo Bichette for his not-so-great defense. But I feel like the Nationals are a team that's going to stay on the down low this year, but definitely make some noise in beating some high contender teams. And speaking of high contender teams, we'll look at the all second baseman infield of the New York Mets now with the acquisition of Bo Bichette. Nathan, how do you feel about that?
I'm gonna be totally honest with you. If you know me for the last 3 or 4 years, which, you know, a bunch of my guys that might be listening from back at home, they know I'm not the biggest Bo Bichette guy. I think he spent $42 million an absolute overpay. That's disgusting from Mets. From like a Blue Jays perspective, did you really need Bo Bichette? Arjun Nirmal is in the system. Jojo Parker's in the system. You have Ernie Clement right there. You have a good, one of the best defensive middle infielders in Andrés Giménez. There is middle infielding. You're losing a bat in Bo Bichette. You never want to lose a good bat in like Bo Bichette, but he was never consistently healthy. And, you know, it's at least we kept Guerrero. I think Guerrero was the big piece. You got Okamoto. You got a good pitcher in Cease. It's not that big of a downgrade in 42 years. Outrageous. And, you know, I like Bo for the player he is, but he was just horrid defensively. And I don't think that really fits into the Blue Jays scheme, wanting to be a defensive first player. But Owen, like, what do you think about this Bo deal?
Yeah, no, it's a bit surprising. And I think for me, you know, the more that the time went on, it kind of seemed almost inevitable that Bo was going to sign with a different team, right? You know, I think if Bo really wanted to stay in Toronto, I think he would have chose to sign earlier. But it's a little surprising, right? Because, you know, Bichette and Vladdy, they came out through assistant together, you know, like past like 9-10 years, right? And, you know, they've built this good friendship. And it almost seemed like, too, like that they had unfinished business, right? You know, you were that close to winning the World Series in the fall, right? And I thought Bichette wanted to get that job done. But no, like you're saying, this Jays team, we exemplified last year. It's always like the next man up mentality, right? We had like really good years from Ernie Clement and Nathan Lucas, and even some sparks of offense from David Schneider, and, you know, good defense from Miles Straw. So we were able to count on those depth guys, to really, you know, help us, get going. And now with the, you know, our starting rotations looking like could be one of the best in the AL right now, you know, with the acquisitions of Cease and hopefully Cody Pons can replicate that season from last year. And yeah, you know, bolstering that bullpen too. You know, now you got Tyler Rogers, my bad. You know, then look at him coming in after Trey Savage. So the Jays got a lot of weapons there from the pitching staff. And I think from the offense, obviously, as you mentioned, it's tough to lose Bichette in that bat. But, you know, with defense like we have with Clement and Giménez, and getting Okamoto and you know, let's not forget about Anthony Santander. Right? He had a down year last year, right? But you know, he's had many good years before that, hitting 44 home runs the season before that. So, you know, look to him to hopefully have a bounce back year.
Okay, so I gotta talk about Santander because I have despised that contract the second it was signed. I liked it for about 10 minutes, and then I looked at his injury history, and I knew something bad was gonna happen, and it did. He played like what, 60 games last year, not even half the season, and he hit like 4 home runs. So you want a guy, you're gonna sacrifice a defensive weapon in your left field spot, in your corner outfield spot, for a guy that's maybe gonna hit a home run. I feel like if you get in a guy like that, you gotta be sure of it, right? But I feel like that contract is just gonna weigh us down now. But you're right, with that next man up mentality, you got guys like Jojo Parker and Arjun Nirmal who have been in the system for a little bit. With Arjun Nirmal, not so much Jojo Parker. But I feel like Okamoto is going to be a huge piece for this team. He was phenomenal in a year where Japanese ball is in a dead ball era. there were a drop off in home runs, a lot more strikeouts for pitchers, and I feel like Okamoto still having a very productive year in terms of that. I feel like he'll be a great addition to this team, and it'll give, and with Bo gone, it'll give space to these guys that had a little bit of a reduced role last year to maybe step up and fill in those shoes collectively. Guys like Barger and Clemens and Jimenez, as you said, who isn't the greatest offensively, but can come up in those clutch moments, as you saw in the Seattle series, hit a couple of doubles. But I feel like the Jays' biggest weapon this year is going to be their pitching staff. I saw somewhere that said the Jays now have the highest and the lowest arm angle in the entire league. They have Treya Savage, who throws like 4 inches over his head, and then Tyler Rogers that throws at about his foot, which is insane. You're going to screw over so many batters like that. I remember, actually, this is completely unrelated, but I was playing MLB The Show with my buddy, and I picked the Giants for the sole reason that they had Tyler Rogers, and I put him in, and he's like, where is he pitching from? He had no idea. And I feel like it's going to catch a lot of batters off guard, which is exactly what the Jays want to do. They want to be that gimmicky team, that new, that young team that's just going to trudge off and push for another World Series, I think.
Yeah, that it's going to be a good team again. Like, the AL East does not look as strong as it has in, like, past years. Like, if you follow up anything with the Yankees, like John Boy Media, they have just been losing it over the Yankees' lack of doing anything. Like, they just signed Bellinger for – it was a pretty good deal for Bellinger and the Yankees. But – it's not like the other team in New York right now. Like, Steve Cohen missed out on Bellinger, and all of a sudden, no, I'm on Bellinger, on Tucker. And all of a sudden, I'm like looking through the Jeff Passan's Twitter, and I'm just like remembering all the trades. Luis Robert's a Met now. That was a trade. They traded Acuna's brother to the White Sox. What an awful feeling for Acuna's brother now. He's part of the White Sox. And then the other trade, there was a bigger trade. Freddie Peralta's a Met, and they got a haul for him. And it doesn't make any sense for the Mets, because Cohen came out and said a few years ago, hey, you know, Mike, chill out, you know, after spending all that money on Soto. But I feel like Juan Soto has come in and said, hey, we got to win now, or I'm out, because he's getting paid a lot of money for a long time, you know, and they feel like they're trying to be like the Dodgers, but with trades, because the Dodgers are the Dodgers. $60 million for Tucker is outrageous. They're just handing out money left, right, and central. It's just kind of disgusting.
And then all their players are getting paid in 2049.
Yeah, it's just like...
Sure.
Shohei, that guy is so good. It's disgusting.
No, he's a freak of nature.
And it's like, where else can this, like, what else does the Dodgers team need? Like, maybe more pitching? But, like, it feels like they got Edwin Diaz. We keep forgetting about that. That happened so long ago.
I didn't even know the Dodgers had Edwin Diaz. I can't lie.
That happened, like, so long ago. Oh. Like, every move the Dodgers make, like, if it's not, like, the Tucker deal, it's going to get forgotten, even though, like, Diaz is one of the best closers in baseball. And it's just, we're heading towards a lockout. I could feel it.
Oh, yeah. Next year. No, it's not going to work. MLB needs a salary cap, or else everything is going to go to poop, I think.
Well, you look at the Dodgers, like they're paying, like, it's an insane amount of money they're paying in luxury tax right now, right? Like, you look at that, and, you know, it's a huge advantage for now for these big markets, like, you know, the New York Mets and the LA Dodgers especially, right? You know, you look at teams that don't have that big market, and they're behind the eight ball, right? And they don't have that you know, same, like, money that they can pay like the Dodgers can. But Nathan, going back to your point there about the New York Mets, one of the other additions that they made this year was, you know, the trade for Marcus Semien, right? And you know, going back now with Bichette and Semien to their days with the Blue Jays, right? They had that chemistry up the middle this year, so, you know, we'll see what that kind of goes to. But yeah, we mentioned they're you know, second and third, they're gonna have Lindor and Semien and Bichette. And Polanco in the infield. Obviously, Polanco and Bichette not playing their, you know, prototypical positions, but yeah, we'll see where that takes them.
I feel like an infield dynamic of Lindor, Semien, and then Polanco at third would be millions of times better, because, as we know, Bo Bichette is not the greatest defensively. I had a prediction. I said it before the show, but I'm going to say it on air. I believe Bo Bichette will have at least 28 defensive runs allowed at third base, because he's never played it in his entire life, and I feel like he's going to struggle immensely on the defensive side of the ball this year.
Yeah, totally. You could see that from Bichette. He's not being good defensively. But to speak to, like, we were talking about the salary cap, I don't know if some owners are just cheap. Like, it's just disgusting how cheap they are. Like, the Pirates owner, Garrett, what is it, Fisher from the A's. I'm not against the move out of Oakland. Oakland has just lost everything.
Yeah,
Vegas, that ball. Have you seen that ballpark, the renderings?
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a phenomenal ballpark.
It's phenomenal. Nice.
Yeah, so it's a combination of just owners being cheap combined with other factors. But I think, you know, I think we've hammered home like the free agency part of it. Like, there's been major moves. I'm kind of glad we got snowed last week, because Thursday, like, everything happened from Thursday night onwards.
That's very true.
And we've just had like the entire MLB has just been shaken up. And the real free agents that really left right now was like Luis Arraez. And so everything's kind of been this side, especially after that Tucker domino fell, everything else fell.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think, and again, I think that's something the Jays could be considering, right? You know, like, do you go after a guy like Luis Arraez, right? Not the most power in the league, but he is a guy that is pretty much a guaranteed 300 hitter. I mean, he's been a 300 hitter pretty much every single year he's been in the league. Some years has gone up to almost 400 in his batting average. And, you know, you're not going to get many home runs from him, but a bat in the lineup who can play, you know, decent defense. He'll have his moments where he's making some errors and stuff. But yeah, definitely more known for his bat. That's another option that you might want to go with for depth. And, you know, Luis Arraez is typically an underrated player. He's probably not going to demand an insane amount of money like Bichette and Tucker. So I think that's something for the Jays to possibly look into.
That's true. And you mentioned before something about strong divisions. Let's talk NHL, because the Atlantic Division in the NHL has been the most insane hockey to watch ever. The top five teams in the Atlantic Division have more points than the first place team in the Pacific Division. And I that's crazy to me. And the Leafs are sixth in the Atlantic Division and are like close to the wild card. We could potentially have six teams from one division on one side of the playoff grid, which is insane to me. But I feel like if we're talking about the Leafs, they're going to have a lot of problems now, because you got OEL's gone down with a lower body injury. Brandon Carlo's been a glass body all year. The Leafs' defensive scheme has been horrendous. And I feel like it's still a down year. Yes, Berube's seat is getting hotter by the day, but I still feel like they're not going to fire him. But another team that I've really like to watch in the NHL is the San Jose Sharks. I can't lie to you, Nate. I know you like the San Jose Sharks. I know you love them. They're just a fun team to watch. And you got the dynamic duo of Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith that are just probably the two funniest hockey players I've ever seen in my life. And you got guys like Michael Misa there, and you got veteran presence with guys like Ryan Reeves and even Mario Ferraro. But I think that's a fun team. And let's talk about that goalie fight. What do you think about that goalie fight from a couple nights ago?
I saw it, Nedeljkovic and Bobrovsky. And I was like, you know, I wasn't really tuned into the game. Like, it's a middle of the day game. I think there was some other sports going on, or I was busy. I was probably doing some other administrative stuff. And then I go check my phone. I'm seeing this clip of Nedeljkovic and Bobrovsky fight. I'm like, I'm all for this. And I'm like, oh my. And like, the Sharks just keep impressing me. And every time I feel like I watch them, and it's just Macklin Celebrini putting on a show. And he's just so impressive. And I was not expecting that of him this season. Like, I was expecting to be good, but not top five in the NHL good. Like, this early, like, I don't want to say it already, but I feel like he's going to be the next Sidney Crosby, the next Canadian kid on a team that's going to really bring us back, the Sharks back into, you know, contention. And Rory Baugh and Kiefer Sherwood's a Shark now, 2 seconds, and some player I don't even know that was on the Sharks. That's a great deal, and they're going to buy some more at the deadline, they're saying, for a defenseman. And it just seems like they turned the corner so quickly, like, almost as quickly as they turned to be a bad team, they've turned it to be a good team. And to speak on the Leafs and the Atlantic Division, that might be the most mid-division of all time. There's like no, like, here's the thing. I can only really speak of, like, I know you said it's a competitive division, but I don't think there's one team that's like really, really good. Like, Buffalo's up there now. Detroit's up there now. Tampa may be the only real team. Tampa and Florida, because they're going to be teams that you don't want to play in the playoffs.
That's very true.
But like, there's only like two or three teams in the NHL that I know are going to be good. That's like Colorado.
Colorado's unreal.
Colorado's like really good. Minnesota, like, barring their set, like their set, like, forward depth,
their center depth, forward depth is not great.
Like, but that's a really good team.
Hey, they got Quinn Hughes.
Quinn Hughes is a great player.
You need a top six center, but you got Quinn Hughes.
They traded away a top six center to get
traded Marco Rossi, which was one of your better young players, to get Quinn Hughes. Speaking of, Sharks need a defenseman. You want Morgan Riley? Take him, because I don't like him anymore.
Never want that contract on the team. I'll take Nick Robertson. That's a player I've always wanted in San Jose.
Nick Robertson.
It's a player I've always wanted.
He is the definition of the modern-day grinder. He's fighting every day for that roster spot on that fourth line, and I feel like the Leafs genuinely have five lines that they can work with, because they got so much, like, forward depth in top line of the AHL, and the guys that they have a healthy scratch. That's good, but when your defense is like last in the NHL in some categories, you got to think, why am I still buying forwards in free agency? Because I feel like you could trade a couple of those bottom tier forwards and maybe a draft pick or two for a decent top four, bottom four defenseman.
Yeah, and you know, getting one of those defensemen that's actually a true known like shutdown defender, right? Like someone who can lay the physical body and stuff. Because right now, at least you have those, you know, offensive defensemen with, you know, like Morgan Riley, OEL's typically is offensive defenseman too. But right now, the Leafs, I don't know, it's interesting to see because, you know, the Leafs they have a very experienced decor, right? If you look at pretty much everyone in the Leafs, you know, Brandon Carlo, Morgan Riley, OEL, Jake McCabe, right? They've all been in the league for, seems like, at least 7-8 years now, right? So it's interesting, you know, with a veteran decor like that, that they're, you know, making some of those turnovers and making the mistakes that has led them to not be the greatest team in the league this year.
Yeah, and another thing I noticed was every year, starting in like 2016, the Leafs have been getting older and heavier every single year. The Leafs average weight, I believe, is 230 pounds. We are molasses on the ice. We don't have Marner anymore, so we don't have that skating. Genuinely, like guys like MacKinnon and Kaprizov, who are just insanely fat, and McDavid, who are like insanely fast skaters, are just doing circles around us. And there's nothing we have done about it. We have done nothing about it. Our decor is probably the slowest, oldest, and heaviest decor in the NHL. And you got Brandon Carlo, who if he stubs his toe, he's out for 6 weeks. And I feel like it was a good trade at first, and that he doesn't play with Charlie McAvoy anymore. So he's not as good. And I feel like the Leafs don't have that guy that you can put every single other defenseman with and just make them good. I feel like my favorite defenseman when he was on the Leafs was Timothy Liljegren. Where is he? Gone. Because he was one of our better defensive prospects. We have Ben Danford coming up in the system, who's tall, big, and slow, and a shutdown, which is, we have that, great. Carlo, shutdown. Riley's more of a puck mover, but he's slow. OEL, offensive defenseman, but he's slow. You sense a recurring theme here, right? You need one of those fast puck-moving defensemen that can get up there, get up to the corner even on the offensive side of the puck, and still get back and still make that move. If Brendan Carlo were to go deep into the corner, he would not be back for another 3 minutes.
Oh yeah, like how much of that are you gonna blame like the coaching? Like it's kind of Berube's system, like. Some of your defensemen are kind of stuck in like the 2010s, that stay-at-home blue line defenseman. The game has changed, and I think a lot of this has come from your GM, Brad Treliving. I think one of the worst hires in...
No, I think so too.
He's like I understand, like it's the guy that built the Florida Panthers dynasty from Calgary, and you said, yeah, that's the guy. You got rid of Kyle Dubas, who's done an all right job with the cards he got played in Pittsburgh. Like
that's true.
He's got an aging cohort.
I don't know about that Stuart Skinner trade, though. That stumped me. It was, you traded for an older, worse goaltender.
I felt like both players, they needed a change of scenery. Yeah. Like Stuart Skinner could not stay in Edmonton.
I think so too.
Tristan Jarry could not stay in Pittsburgh because both those fan bases were to come to their head for their heads. Like it was like Stuart Skinner in Edmonton. You would look at any sort of like Edmonton media and they were going to go after
him. But I feel like a change of scenery for Stuart Skinner was the AHL or worse, because I feel like guys like he can be good, but then he's also in the corner when the other team is right in front of the net with the puck, and he's nowhere to be found. Which I feel like for Jarry, yes, change of scenery is great. He's doing well in Edmonton, but he's hurt right now, I think. Skinner, I don't know. I never liked him. I thought he was a horrible goaltender. I've always thought he was not the greatest. But I think in terms of goalies, Edmonton had a couple of other options that they could have pulled from other teams. Like they got teams that got good backups that are riding the bench. And if you want a veteran goaltender, guys like Jake Allen or not Jake Allen. Jake Allen's still in the league.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Guys like Jake Allen or even Reimer on a PTO. You could have. I would have liked James Reimer in Edmonton.
Yeah. Well, and you look at the Oilers too, right? Last year, like I think a lot of people think, like Stuart Skinner, you know, he was on a Stanley Cup Finals team for 2 years in a row. But when you look at those games, right, like he didn't even play in like half them, right? A lot of the games were Calvin Pickard, right? So, you know, people are like, oh yeah, well, like you know, a Stanley Cup team must have to have a good goalie. But we know it's McDavid, Draisaitl, it's that depth that they have, it's the you know the offensive defenseman that they have, and so, well, I think it was a good change of scenery for both teams. I think that there's definitely better options. I mean, hey, I'll call a bit of bias here. I'm a Habs fan. The Habs had three goalies for a bit, right? Now they sent Jacob Fowler back down to the minors. You know, maybe the Oilers could have got Sam Montembeau, right? I mean, that's a possible option. He was not too far removed from being on the Four Nations roster. I know he didn't play, but you know, yeah, there's all those options that could have been.
You mentioned the international play. How are we feeling about the Olympics? I'm personally loving this Team Canada. You got big game Binner in net. You got Max Selle on the top line with Crosby and McKinnon. I feel like that line is going to be insanely productive, and Binnington is going to have his days, but I think he's still the best goalie for the job, and I feel like when it comes to international play, Binnington is your guy.
Totally.
Yeah, you could see that, but like there were some good players left off this Canada team.
That's very true.
Some could say Bedard, but Bedard, I don't think he's like he can play hockey. We know he's one of the best shooters in all the game, but this is a game like you could see this. These are some John Cooper picks we're seeing all over this team. It's just guys that can play both ways. They can play defense and they can kill penalties. That's the entire team. It's just these two-way forwards. And then, unfortunately for Bedard, he's a smaller guy. He's not the greatest defensively. He has a great shot, but it's a one-way player, and then they don't really want that. I feel like the Wood twins up in Colorado, that goaltending tandem, I would have loved to see them. Like, I understand Binnington's a good goalie that can win. He won for the Four Nations team. But I feel like Team Canada is loving too much right now. They're loving the old prestige. I feel like once again, Stuart Skinner, like he's getting more opportunities because he went to two Stanley Cups. That's like the only reason he's probably getting opportunities. It's kind of like why Mike Babcock stuck around the league for so long.
Oh boy.
So like this Team Canada, it's a lot we're seeing in like Canadian hockey right now. It feels like they're taking some good players, but they're taking a lot of prestige. Like what is Drew Doughty doing on the Canadian national team in 2026?
Yeah, that's very true.
Must be just leadership. I can't think of what else, right? There's many defensemen in the league that I think are more, I mean, obviously, you know, look at his career. He's been in the league now, been on a part of two cup teams, but, you know, like Frankie was saying about a lot of the Leafs defensemen, right? Drew Doughty is getting older. He's not getting any faster. And, you know, you look at some other options around in the league. I mean, call me crazy, and I know some people agree with me, but when you look at Matthew Schaefer having this, you know, great rookie year, I mean, I know like having an 18-year-old on an Olympic team is a lot to ask for, but look at how the player's been performing so far this year, and going with that. And you look at some of the mentorship that he would have on that team, right? We saw Celebrini playing with Sid, you know, in the IHF championship. And I think Sid helped Celebrini, you know, have one of the good seasons he's having right now, right? And so, yeah, it's something to consider.
Yeah, and I feel like a couple of the picks are legacy picks, right? You mentioned Doughty and other guys, right? I feel like those are legacy picks. They're like, oh, you're what, 38? Let's give you one last ride in an Olympics. We have other people. That's why, but then I feel like you look at the States and they're not doing the same thing. They told Patty Kane to get lost, which I think it hurts me because that guy has been dealt a bad hand. Those last few years in Chicago were horrible. He went to the Rangers for like four games and did decently. And now he's having a career resurgence in Detroit. And he's having a decent year for a guy who's 36 years old. You're not going to let him on the Olympic team? Not even in a sometimes role? Like, come on. Your team is mostly young guys. I think there's got to be a balance. You can't have too many players above the age of 33, but you got to have at least one. Because your team right now, it's all young guys. It's all younger guys and guys that don't have like that like professionalism. Like I saw this this post from, I believe it was Hockey Illuminati, and the reason that the Leafs, the culture in Toronto for hockey and the culture in hockey as a whole is changing in the sense that we're losing the professionalism and the gentlemanly nature of the game. You see guys like Nylander and Matthews, they're walking into the arena in these designer coats and fur and sweatpants, and then you got guys like McDavid and McKinnon who are in suits and professional and all that other stuff, and I feel like that is needed to promote good hockey culture and keep the game the way it is, because I feel like once you lose that, I don't care, I'm getting $13 million a year, I can go and poop my pants on the ice if I really wanted to. I feel like once you get to that point, you lose the desire to play hockey. It's like how Shorzy said it best, is they don't hate to lose. And I feel like that is a problem with a lot of young hockey players nowadays. And I think that with this Olympic team, these older guys, sure, they might hinder the actual game performance, but I feel like it'll give these young guys a slap in the face and say, look, if you're going to represent this country, you need to work hard. And I feel like the States not having that, they're losing that that potential for these young players to learn and to grow and to be and to just bring positive hockey culture back.
Yeah, I agree with that, kind of like to that point that you need that professionalism in hockey, especially when you look at the Leafs. Like, a large part of that Leafs fan base is about to rip Matthews and Nylander apart for what, how they dress. But I feel like the United States team, they're not all the young guys. Like, they have some guys that are going to whip you into shape, like the Tkachuk brothers. Don't let those guys start talking in the locker room. Like, those guys are going to fire me up to do, like, some math homework or whatnot. Like, those guys are nails. But, like, one more thing I kind of want to talk about before we wrap it up here is, you know, NFL, it's college football. We're getting to the hot moments of these leagues.
January football.
That's what we love. And we're now in the conference games for the NFL. We got Patriots-Broncos, my Broncos, and we got Rams-Seahawks in the NFC West matchup. Frankie, what are we feeling about those games?
Can the Broncos do it with their backups quarterback? And they just signed that guy that they had in 2023.
Ben DiNucci.
The guy who was playing rec league like 3 months ago. I don't know what you're gonna do there. But I feel like it'll be an entertaining game because the Broncos defense is just absurdly good with guys like Pat Surtain. But the Patriots have been a fun team to watch this year. And as a fan of an AFC East team myself, the Bills, which absolutely heartbreaking. He had the ball in his hands. Come on.
He did not have the ball in his hands.
That was not a pick.
No rules analysis.
That was not a pick.
No one thought that was a catch. No rules analysis thought that was
what?
A catch.
Okay. You know what? Water under the bridge. I don't want to talk about it. Water under the bridge. I feel like it'll be an entertaining game. But I feel like old man Matthew Stafford might get it done against the Seahawks. And the Seahawks are good, but I had a couple of buddies that said this multiple times. I don't think Sam Darnold is that guy. He had a great year with the Vikings last year, but is he that guy? You look at his track record, and it's not great. It's not great. Sam Darnold has not had a great track record. But do you think he's that guy that can get his team to a Super Bowl?
History says no, because the Rams are his kryptonite. Like, Sam Darnold for the last 2 years, I think for his whole career, he's been a good player, but his system and his environment dictates a lot of what he does. Because he's been a good player on some great teams as of late. Like, that last year's Vikings team, yes, J.J. McCarthy came to the system, and he wasn't good at all, because he's a bad player on a good team. Like, the Vikings are not as, like, systematically not as good as they were last year. But then he comes over to Seattle, and Seattle has a daunting defense. They have elite running backs. I know Charbonnet's been out, but they have Kenneth Walker, and they have an elite running back duo. And they have JSN. He's like, I can chuck it up to JSN. He's going to make a play. They have Cooper Kupp. Like, Cooper Kupp's having a resurgence here in Seattle after he was elite for the Rams. And they have weapons just all over the field, and they are a good team. And maybe one of the, like, top to bottom, Seattle, they are here for a reason. They're the one seed in the NFC for a reason. I don't think that's because of Sam Darnold. He's doing his job. He's not making the bonehead plays, but his kryptonite has been the Rams. And
that's very true.
I know Seattle's a tough place to play in, but it's Matthew Stafford and a good Rams team with Puka Nacua, and they're loaded too, versus a Seahawks team with Sam Darnold, who, when the lights get bright, he starts seeing ghosts. And if he starts seeing ghosts, if he makes some one or two mistakes, the Seahawks season could be over.
No, JSN better slap him in the face. Also, JSN or Cooper Kupp, if you're listening to this show, please come to the Bills. We need a wide receiver. It's bad. It has gotten to the point where we are trotting out Brandon Cooks for playoff games. Let's shift focus, because I don't want to cry. Let's shift focus to college football and that national championship game. Indiana. I was laughing the entire game because I had a buddy who made a little bit of a wager, let's say. Mendoza... for, I think it was 199 something passing yards or Beck, but his thing was, he thought that the game was going to be a pass dominated game. It was not. Mendoza was just giving the ball to Kalon Black the entire time, and he was looking like a prime Marshawn Lynch. Okay, Kalon Black had a phenomenal game in that national championship game, and Carson Beck sucks. I think he sucks. I think he has sucked. I think he has not been good for the last 2 years. And I think he went to Miami just because they gave him $85 gajillion. And I feel like there's nothing else. There's no other reason why Carson Beck did not declare for the NFL draft. And if he does, he's going to be like a sixth round pick because he stinks.
Yeah, I think it's one of your coldest takes you've given all day that Carson Beck sucks. Bye. I actually have a friend from high school. He's at Indiana right now. Like, he's a first year student at Indiana. Time of his life right now. he hits me up. He's like, yeah, what do you think about Indiana? I'm like, yeah, like, early in the season, I'm like, you know, it's Indiana. Like, well, what are they really going to do? Like, they're kind of fraud. They haven't played really anyone. Then they beat Oregon.
16-0.
Yeah, and like all of a sudden they keep on winning and winning. I'm like, and they're killing teams. I'm like, dude, Miami's not gonna get it done.
And they beat my Buckeyes.
And Miami all of a sudden, oh, dude, you've not had a good year of football.
No.
And like that Miami game, like I thought they were gonna choke it down the stretch, but after that blocked punt for the touchdown, I'm like, oh, my Indiana's gonna pull it away. And then they have a drive. Carson Beck steps back, and what was that throw? He throws into double coverage. It's a low ball, double coverage underthrown. I'm like, dude, it's a one score game.
You've put the cherry on top of my sundae of Carson Beck hate.
Yeah, he's been an awful quarterback at Georgia. He was bad, and he only won because Georgia's defense has like every NFL
and their wide receivers.
Like they're the
shout out Ladd McConkey.
They're one of the most loaded teams of all time. Those Georgia teams from the late 2020s, and he goes to Miami because he's chasing a bag and he's chasing girls because Miami. Go you. And like, he's an overrated quarterback. He gets a lot of hate, but like, he doesn't get enough hate because he's trash. He's
thank you.
Been a system quarterback his entire career. I don't know why we're just digging into Carson Beck, but he's a choker and he's not very good.
Yeah. Have you seen those Snapchats? Oh, wow.
Hopefully he's not listening to this podcast right now.
Oh,
hey, if you are, what's up? That's it.
He wants some of the NIL money, and
I do. I
want to talk about NIL. Like it's keeping a lot of like Dante Moore staying in college, even though Patrick Mahomes Jr. Dylan
Raiola. Yeah, I saw that. Okay, Raiola commits. Yeah, sure. Oh, I'm gonna be in a great Big Ten program. Dante Moore goes, nah, you're gonna be the backup. What? If I'm Dylan Raiola, I am reaming into that Oregon coach. Cause why the hell am I here? Why the hell am I here? Because if I'm Dylan Raiola. That's my career. Gone. Because your starter in Nebraska, you had a good year. You can definitely go to another program that is in need of a quarterback. Like, potentially Miami. Now that Carson Beck is done and maybe, hopefully, is not granted a sixth year of eligibility, which he probably could be. But if you're Dylan Raiola, you're pissed, in my opinion. I think if I'm Dylan Raiola, I'm saying, no, I'm going back in the portal. Because what the hell? Because Dante Moore coming back, and now I'm supposed to be in my final year, in my year that's supposed to get me to the NFL, and I'm sitting on the bench? I'd be pissed.
You know, I don't hate that for Raiola, actually, just to sit on the bench one more year. I think he was a true freshman last year. He's a freshman. He has some time to sit. And he got banged up last year in his ankle. He has time to afford him to sit, especially learning an Oregon offense. He was good last year, but if he continues to play like that, he won't be a high draft pick. I think if he sits and he learns that Oregon system for 1 year, then once Dante Moore's bad next year, which I highly doubt in a good Oregon team and a good Oregon system, he'll come back, I think, 2027, and then he'll show well. I think he'll be the top quarterback prospect for 27 if it's not Arch Manning.
Or Julian Sand.
I don't think Julian Sand, man. I'm not feeling that.
What, did he have 12 incompletions the entire year last year?
This guy's just spewing stats. Just for Julian Sand, you know, like Drew Aller was supposed to be the quarterback of the future.
Oh, no, that guy stunk.
Yeah, he was bad. But, like, I think we're in for some good football coming up in, like, the next few weeks. Championship games, Super Bowl.
So
Frankie,
excited.
Frankie, what are your predictions for the games?
Okay, let's do this. So, AFC Championship, I think it's going to be a close one. But I do think the Patriots are going to come away with it. I think Drake May has just been phenomenal. Their receivers have been locked down. Stephon Diggs has not been begging for the ball. It's the reason he left Buffalo, by the way, because they just wouldn't throw to him anymore. But I feel like their running back duo, especially Travion Henderson, Buckeyes legend, by the way, the Ohio State University, I feel like he's been a great rookie for this team, and I feel like the Patriots are going to come away with it. On the NFC side, however, again, they're both going to be close games. I don't think the Patriots-Broncos will be high-scoring, but I think this one will. Because I feel like Sam Darnold is just going to chuck up Hail Mary balls to Cooper Kupp and JSN and hope to God they're playing like prime Randy Moss, which they probably will because JSN is phenomenal. JSN, if you listen to this, please come to the Bills. But no, I do think it'll be a Seahawks-Patriots Super Bowl, and I feel like that'll be a good game too. It'll be a remnant of the Brady era. Like Drake May just took the system and ran with it, and he's playing like a god. And I feel like it'll be a very entertaining Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Alan, what do you think, man? Give me your predictions. Maybe be like more realistic than the way you just spewed over there.
Well, as you guys know, football is definitely not one of my main sports. But yeah, no, I think with the play, you know, Drake May's second-year quarterback, right? You know, he's literally the same age as, you know, Taylor Algorithm, right? And here he is in the NFL, and very good chance, I think, to go to the Super Bowl. So I'm taking the Patriots. And I think Matthew Stafford and the Rams. I think Patriots and Rams will be in the finals. I think with, you know, Matthew Stafford, what did he win the Super Bowl a couple years ago with the Rams? 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think he's hungry for another one. And I think I see Patriots and Rams, but I truly believe both games will be very close and entertaining. But with Sam Darnold being a bit inconsistent and stuff, and gambling and taking risky plays and stuff at times, leading to some picks as we've seen in the past, could be a bit of a downside for the Seahawks.
Yeah. Now I'm going to throw a question at you. What was your favorite playoff game? Wild card, divisional? Well, what was your favorite game to watch?
Bears-Packers.
Oh,
that wild card
definitely.
Game? Dude, like, here's the thing. I couldn't watch the Broncos game. I was calling Lakehead versus Laurier. I was score watching on my phone like during periods. I'm like, touchdown. And I saw Buffalo kick the like game tying field goal like right before overtime. I'm like, damn it. we might be cooked. And then I didn't see how the game ended. I didn't see the whole catch that was an interception.
It was a catch.
It was an interception. And, you know, we're not going to do this. Game ended 33-30. And I'm like, I started celebrating. And then Bo Nix went down with an injury. And I'm like I'm on my knees.
That's when I started celebrating.
I'm on my knees in like the Waterloo Memorial Recreation Center on the track. And I'm like, oh my, no way. But if I'm going to predict the playoffs, it's going to be Broncos, Rams. I've had that. I can show you the bracket I made at the start of the playoffs. It's going to be Broncos, Rams. It's Diddy time. I feel it. We're going to have it. And, you know, we're going to be in for a treat. And I hope, you know, it's Broncos on top, because I will be doing victory laps around Waterloo if we win.
Yeah. Waterloo, if you see someone running around the campus with their shirt off and minus 10 weather, you know who it is.
It's going to be minus 50, man. It's not going to be minus 10. It's too warm for this part of town. All right. So I think we're going to call it there. I'd like to thank once again Owen and Frankie for joining me on the first episode of 2026. I believe this is the sixth episode of the year we've done, actually, from talking about last year. But thank you for listening in. That was Gold and Bold, your premier spot for everything Laurier sports and just professional sports in general. Done? Yeah, I think. Yeah, it's good. All right. Beauty.
Yeah. All right. Ciao, guys.
Awesome. Good work.
Here's our little story.